I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education, in which we sit down with the presidents of colleges and universities throughout the state. My guest is the president of the Maryland Institute College of Art, Samuel Hoy. Among the nation's leading metropolitan areas, Greater Baltimore is the fourth most educated region in America. 17% of area residents hold advanced or professional degrees. That's substantially higher than the national average. And for students at MICA, will their art degree prepare them for a sustainable career? One of the country's leading art schools, MICA teaches art and entrepreneurship. And as one of Baltimore's anchor institutions, it has a unique capacity to contribute to our city's creative economy. Sammy Hoy joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a good weekend and thanks for being with us today. Today it's another installment in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education. From time to time, I sit down with presidents of Maryland colleges and universities to talk about the challenges that each of their institutions face and how those institutions are connected to the fabric of the communities in which they are located. Today, my guest is Samuel Hoy, who was appointed the president of the Maryland Institute College of Art in 2014. MICA has nearly 3,500 students enrolled in its undergrad, graduate, and continuing studies programs. Those students come to Baltimore from 49 states and 52 countries to study fine arts, design, electronic media, art education, and other creative pursuits. Tuition costs at private colleges and universities are often prohibitive, and many schools face declining enrollment. Art schools, particularly at the graduate level, are no exception. Kiplinger's financial newsletter published a list earlier this year of the worst college majors for a lucrative career. Five of the top 10 are majors that MICA offers. And by the way, of particular comfort to me was the fact that radio and television announcing was number 2 on the worst majors list behind photography, but we were ahead of culinary arts. So MICA has long been in the upper echelon of art schools, and under Sammy Hoy's leadership, Kiplinger's notwithstanding, it has become a leader in incorporating entrepreneurship into the curriculum. Can you follow your passion of making art and make a living? Are businesses looking for creative thinkers whose training as artists positions them at the front of the line when cutting-edge companies are looking for talent? Sammy Hoy joins me today in Studio A. We'll take your calls a little bit later in the program. For now, if you'd like to drop us an email, the address is midday@wypr.org. You can also tweet us at @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us and ping us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Sammy, it's good to see you, sir.
Great to see you, Tom. Thank you for the invitation to be here.
Delighted to have you, as always. So, in this day and age, what's an artist? What does it mean, do you think, to be an artist? And then if you have some, you know, fairly specific notion of what that is as a trainer of artists, what can you do in that person's on that person's behalf?
Great question. I think today being an artist is a state of mind. It's also a state of practice, and the two really have to need to come together. The state of mind means that the creative individual has to see himself, herself, or themselves in a particular position, how to exercise the creative core of that person's essence and skill sets and apply it professionally and socially. And then the practice, of course, is that if you have that desire and intention, you need to have the skills and the craft in order to make it happen. So it's really, it's that, again, the attitude, the aptitude, but also the skill sets and the concepts.
Now, there are plenty of people who do artistic things, but those the young people that you're that make up your student body are people who are obviously very good at it because they've gone through a rigorous competition to get into MICA. And when they're there, then what's your responsibility to them? What do you need to have them? What do you need to be sure that they leave MICA 4 years later, 2 years later, whatever degree they're getting?
Art school is a very fortunate place. Unlike other higher education institutions where students just believe they're following a light path to go to colleges and universities, but they may not know what they want to do, our students actually arrive on campus with great passion, knowing probably from the day they were born, many of them, that they want to be artists and designers and educators. There is a call of nature, so to speak, when they come. And when they come to school, they actually join a tribe of many like-minded young people and people of all ages to become that community. So there is a purity and a passion that's unlike many other general college universities. Our responsibility is that many of our students are on the younger end. Of course, we also have students who are more mature and older coming in, but many of students are out of high school or within a few years of high school. They come with that passion, but they don't necessarily have the life experiences yet or the perspective to translate that into the meaning of their passion and their sense of self and the relationship to the world, and also learning how to make that work professionally, socially, etc. So it is the duty of the school to help make that transition possible. And so I would say we have fantastic raw materials. As you noted, MICA is a top school, very selective students coming in. It's taking for granted, so to speak, that they are gifted and can make good art and design. So we are trying to instill in them the above and beyond. How do they take that art and design talent and cultivate a sense of directions in their mind and develop for each of them their own compass as to how to direct their ideas, vision, and apply it in a way that can anchor a meaningful livelihood that's also to the benefits of others and to the benefits of society. So that's where we're our goal.
What about this calculus that a lot of people delight in making about, you know, the value of a college education? When I've talked to your peers around the state and the various colleges, community colleges, you know, some are very career oriented, you know, come and learn to be a nurse practitioner or learn to be a STEM, you know, an engineer or something that, you know, will guarantee you a job is essentially what they're saying. How do you feel about this general calculus about, you know, I'm going to spend X on a college education, and at MICA that's going to be a lot of money. It's going to be upwards of $200,000. In terms of as an investment in your future, so to speak, is that even a valid calculus to make? Is it the right way to approach the issue of what to do
in
college?
I believe so. Anyone makes a important decision that involves financial investment, especially in this day and age, has to make that kind of calculus. And I think there are two questions actually in your one question, part A and part B, and I'll try to address them succinctly. I think the number one question is really, what is the unique value proposition of a visual arts education, art and design education that MICA offers? And then the part two, I think, is that worth the money of coming to a private school like MICA? Mm-hmm. If you agree with those two questions.
Yep.
Yeah. So I would say that the value, MICA does have a very strong value proposition. There's two parts to that too. So one is that higher education, actually by research, the value is very, very clear and very, very positive, meaning that college graduates with a bachelor degree earns more than those who don't have a bachelor degree. And then those who have an advanced degree earns even more than a college degree. The Labor of Department Statistics prove that clearly. It's just as very contrary to our current governmental beliefs and also public opinion. It also shows that higher education graduates have better lives. They enjoy better health, they're more engaged in their community, they are more informed citizens, and they also have more life satisfaction, and they tend to save more as well. So all those good things are higher education. For visual arts education, art design education, and art education graduates like MICA, we believe that they are also learning to apply the currency of the future. We are moving in no uncertain terms into a knowledge-based economy and to an age where information, ideas, knowledge, and innovation is going to drive the economy in the future. And art and design students bring that particular brand of expertise into the formula. Later on in the interview, we can talk a little bit more about how MICA is actually diversifying the venues in which our students can actually apply their talent. So the proposition is that we are actually providing the kind of well-rounded education that amplifies a particularly needed set of expertise. And you might have heard this several years ago. IBM did a vast survey of CEOs around the globe, and the number one skills, more than people skills, more than organizational skills, is creativity. And art and design students have that in spades. Now, the question why the public is questioning the value of the return on investment in higher education is because we do have a problem. And the problem is that the cost of higher education is getting out of hand. The escalation of cost is outpacing the escalation or the increase in student in family ability to earn and to save. So when families are experiencing financial stress and at the same time they are getting diminished or no assistance in the in funding their students to come to college, of course their mind is going to turn to that first job that they get, the shorter term, but unfortunately also more short-sighted approach as to what job and what income do my children get the first, right after graduation. And the kind of education that we want to provide, it's a lifelong ability to thrive, to reinvent oneself, and to reinvent society kind of going forward. So we need to address both. And I think the solution will come from the higher education institution like MICA really making a much more compelling case and showing boldly the evidence of the outcomes. It also has to come with our very conscientious and maybe disruptive practices in controlling cost so that the tuition doesn't keep going up and up and up. But the reality, especially for a private institution like MICA that offers very high-end, high-touch services in addition to very small classrooms, we don't have classrooms that have 100 students in a big seminar hall.
There's no lecture halls.
No, yeah, exactly. Right. Ours is a conservatory approach. The classes are between 10 and 18 students, and that is costly. So I think in our case, our solution is going to be, again, being innovative in controlling costs, but more interestingly, more importantly, is how can we increase the earning power of our students so that they can come out and make a better living. And there is a wonderful survey that's been done several years in a row now. It's called the Strategic National Arts Alumni Survey Project, SNAP. And SNAP has surveyed 100,000 art and design graduates all across the country among all the different schools. And the results are that students basically very happy. 90% of them approve the school that they attend. 75% of them would choose to repeat the education at the same school because they like the approach and the people. And also they report life satisfaction because about 74-75% of them actually work in area that's related to the studies. In contrast, biology, civil engineering, and other maybe more pragmatic disciplines, only about 50 to 53% of them actually work in related fields after graduation. So on a happiness level and life satisfaction level, art students actually do very well. The one area art and design students don't do as well is actually on income level. They make a living, but the living that the average medium salary, it's a little low. So MICA is really trying to correct that piece and look at the data, look at the nature of the students that we have, look at the trends of society and say, I think there is a place here that we can have these extremely gifted, creative individuals that can still be happy making the kind of craft, art, and design that they like, but also be more bolder, more confident, be more ambitious to venture into other area so that they can demonstrate the value and earning more money back. So I think we are going to try to make that work.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot more ways to be happy than making money. Money is one of one element in
but there's nothing wrong with actually making the money the right way.
And that's, I guess, part of the animating force behind your emphasis on entrepreneurship.
Correct.
So let's talk about that when we come back from a break. It's Midday on Higher Education. We'll have more with MICA President Sammy Hoy when Midday returns. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Paige, what do you think about the value of an arts education if you're a MICA grad? I would love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a conversation about what's happening at the U.S. southern border and the Trump administration's immigration policy. There was just an announcement today about a policy making it ever more difficult to get citizenship, having to do with immigrants using social services. We'll talk about it tomorrow with Krish Omara Vignaraja. She's the president and CEO of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. Dave Cronin, who does government relations for Catholic Relief Services, and Carolyn Barker Villena, a regional director for Latin America for Lutheran World Relief. So, conversation about immigration that's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's another installment in our Midday on Higher Education series. My guest is Samuel Hoy. He's the president of MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art. You are welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And you can also ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Sammy, entrepreneurship is very central now to the education that your students receive at MICA. What does that mean? How do you incorporate the skills of entrepreneurship into the college art education?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. First of all, I think it's getting more central. We started the journey a few years ago in 2015, so we're still at the forefront. But even with that, we are a leader among art schools right now in incorporating creative entrepreneurship into art and design education. I would argue that artists and designers were the original entrepreneurs, even when the term came up, even though many of them might not think so, because they are used to freelancing and they're used to pitching their own projects, design projects to clients or fine arts projects to installation venues.
The original giggers in the gig economy.
They really anticipate the gig economy. Therefore, I would say that the student population at MICA and at art schools really has the entrepreneurship DNA in them. But a traditional art design education tends not to activate that DNA, and MICA is activating that big time in our current approach. In 2015, we're very fortunate to have the partnership of the Phillips and Carol Radcliffe Foundation to help us launch a venture competition that's the largest of its kind among art schools. Not so uncommon among universities, research universities, but for an art school, it was very new.
It's kind of like a Shark Tank thing, right? I mean,
yeah,
people sort of pitch their
We actually toyed with the idea of calling it Art Tank, but our students really hated that name, so we didn't use it. So instead, it's called Upstart Venture Competition. We set aside a pool of about $100,000 per year for our graduating class each year, both undergrad and graduate program that year's class, plus the alumni for the year before. They could come back and pitch their most interesting ideas. And out of that, we select 8 finalists who then go through a boot camp for all sorts of necessary skills and concepts regarding entrepreneurship. And then they come back for a very public pitching to the public after they actually go through a private pitching with judges. And they also pair with mentors from different fields, business, technology, et cetera, to work with them. So these are people who usually don't work with art and design students and students are not exposed to. But through this venture competition, now they're actually learning how to make their case and also receiving assistance and guidance.
Does the case have to be for a business or can it be for an art project?
No, this has to be for business. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Radcliffe Foundation is very clear. This has to be a for-profit business. But because MICA is very socially engaged, and we can talk about that later on, without forcing the issue, I would say each year probably 80% of the projects have tremendous social content in it. So we don't need to force it, but the social entrepreneurship and creative for-profit entrepreneurship really actually come together quite beautifully automatically just because of who we are and the kind of students that we attract. And then the winners, 5 out of 8, would share that pool of $100,000.
And so they get seed money
for their
businesses.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And also, and then we also provide some aftercare to make sure that the mentors stay with them and to make sure that the projects are some lake and then they launch into the world. And as you know, entrepreneurs learn succeed through serial entrepreneurship. So their first project may not exceed and oftentimes don't succeed. And the foundation and Micah are both very comfortable with that, because for us, it's really about instilling a certain kind of thinking and aptitude. And once that, we trust that the graduates will go and become successful entrepreneurs in many other ways. This might tickle you. To run this project, Micah has so far the only title of a entrepreneurship evangelist on campus. And so we actually have a wonderful person doing that. And we are also on course of...
And that's her title?
She has a more boring kind of bureaucratic title, but her nickname, and people know her by that
as
name.
As the entrepreneurship evangelist.
Exactly.
The Micah entrepreneurship
right. Stephanie Chin, she's absolutely wonderful.
Good for her.
So we are actually working now to centralize this approach and create a center for creative entrepreneurship. And we should have some very exciting news coming up shortly about that announcement.
We also have
a cross-functional team that includes deans, faculty, and staff members looking at how we can move that approach more into the curriculum as well.
Sammy Hoy is my guest. He is the president of MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. We got a ton of calls here for you, Sammy. Let's start with Bethany at the Aberdeen Proving Ground. Bethany, welcome to Midday with Sammy Hoy.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I didn't get to hear the entire interview, but I did want to comment. I have a bachelor's degree from the Art Institute of Atlanta and a master's from Savannah College of Art and Design. I'm originally from the South. And my art degrees have been very beneficial in my work in the federal government. And it's always been very helpful to have that creative background. And it's usually what has set me apart from others in my current career field. And speaking to entrepreneurship, what I did appreciate about both my programs at the Art Institute and at SCAD, even if our plan was to go on and work for a company rather than work for ourselves, we were still given that the empowerment to want to become entrepreneurs. So even if I didn't want to work for the government anymore, I could always fall back on the skills that I learned in undergrad and grad school at art schools, and use that creativity that I just really learned to cultivate.
Yeah,
Bethany, I'm so glad you said that. That creative capacity and that capacity to iterate in many different ways and keep reinventing is actually it's a wonderful, wonderful gift.
Yeah, and Bethany, if you don't mind my asking, what do you do for the federal government? What is your actual what's your job responsibility?
My official title is public affairs specialist, but what that means is I do public relations for the U.S. Army. I'm not in the military; I'm a civilian, and I pretty much do public relations. And specifically, I manage digital communications, and that was pretty much my focus in undergrad. And then I apply my degree in arts administration to the strategic planning side of what I do in public affairs.
Yeah, well, that's a direct application. Okay, thanks for that call.
And thank you so much for sharing with us. What you just said resonates a lot with a lot of MICA alum when they share what they value most about their MICA experience, aside from that they love their faculty, is that they really appreciate that MICA has taught them how to think. And you would think that coming from art school, you would say, oh, the school has taught me how to paint, how to sculpt, how to do this. But it's really teaching them how to think. So it's very much in line with what you share with us. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for that call, Bethany. Let's go to Michael in Hempstead. Michael, welcome to Midday with Sammy Hoy.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Sammy. How's it going?
Good. Thanks. And you?
Good. Hey, listen, I went to a sister school of yours. It was originally called Philadelphia College of Art, and then it became University of Arts when I was there in the 80s.
Right.
And I believe we had the same foundation program you do, the Bauhaus method, where everybody freshman year takes 2D design, 3D design, drawing, and art history. Is that correct?
Yes, used to. MICA had a very, very strong and renowned foundation program. Because times have changed, we have very recently evolved it into what we call first-year experience. It's a different kind of foundation program. Students still, first-year students still required to take it, but it's a more integrated, holistic program that ties in many different things, aside from different courses like the Bauhaus method, where you learn painting and drawing and three-dimensional design and color theory, etc. Our first-year experience now tries to synthesize things, again, as I mentioned at the top of this conversation with Tom, how to translate, in a way, their passion, their art and design making and thinking, but tie it into kind of larger issues in society, what is their own identity, et cetera, and then also build in, as necessary now, time management, financial management, so that from year one, basically students are groomed to think and act like professional artists. So I think that's a big change for us. It's been very successful.
Well, what I liked about that very much was that it taught us to think quote-unquote, outside of the box, literally. When we did drawing classes, you had the 30-second gropies, 1 minute, 5 minute.
Yes.
And when you go through life, you don't just have tunnel vision. If you kind of hit a dead end, you were able to have the ability to try, option B, option C, option D. Currently, I work with special needs kids at a Baltimore County elementary school, and we also, our school is now currently STEAM, which is STEM plus art.
Right.
And I work with some of the younger ones, and we do all kinds of creative things, thinking and three-dimensional stuff like the Rubik's Cube and the Soma puzzle that came before that, and also two-dimensional things. And, I mean, it's a way, like you say, it's a way of thinking. It's a way of approaching life. And that's something I learned from art school, and I try to pass that on with the children I work with. And I think, it's like you're kind of opening a door. Like if you're learning a foreign language or in Boy Scouts trying to learn tie knots, it's like you can't get it, and then all of a sudden you get it. And you're, like you say, your mind, you look at things differently, and it really changes the way you go through life and look at the world, I think, for the better.
Absolutely. And also you look at things from different angles. It's not just one single angle. A lot of time when you go to a program and you learn to be an expert, you feel that you kind of have one approach. And in an art and design school, you learn to iterate and attack a subject or an idea from many different angles. So you break down assumptions in order to come to the most original and best idea and solution, at the end. That's exactly, I think, what you just described. And thank you so much for passing that on to the next generation.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Appreciate that call. When it comes to the challenges you face training the artists of today, not just to be entrepreneurial about what they do, but also obviously to be skilled at what they do, there was a report that the National Endowment for the Arts released in 2016 called a report on Creativity Connects.
Right.
And they said that among the top five issues in this report, one talked about the training not keeping pace with the artists' evolving needs and opportunities. So the market is evolving quickly, and you've got to evolve quickly in terms of your curriculum. So what are you doing in that regard?
Yeah, very much so. And thank you for citing that report. That report is very important to us, and also participated in the dissemination of that report, kind of myself too. Some of the other findings that in the report is that artists are increasingly working in non-art setting, and artists now are also working across disciplinary boundaries. Arts practice are very much informed by technology, and artists are becoming more entrepreneurial. So Micah's curricular evolution and how our pedagogy is shifting, including the first year experience I just described and the creative economy, basically is all taking that into account, the trends that are developing in society, and matching that with our students' current needs, but also their future demands. And so what we are trying to move forward at Micah, aside from everything I just described, it's also a particular educational model we are beginning to call integrative education. What that means, it's a creative education that's very proudly art and design centric, but not afraid, in a matter of fact, aggressively and radically intersecting with other traditional and non-traditional spheres that art and design come together: art, science, technology, business, health, environmental, so forth and so on, so that MICA will provide our students with the broadest options possible upon graduation. We'll be very happy if a student decides he, she, or they might want to paint all day and just do fine arts. That'll be wonderful. But more and more students nowadays are also looking at a very hybridized, you know, career, mixing, creating projects of their own, doing community work for nonprofits or for social cause, and then taking on clients at the same time. So we want all of our students to have that capacity to juggle and to mix as they wish, and also to, again, make their value known and appreciated and paid by these different areas. So, for example, we have a residency at MICA that's very exciting with Johns Hopkins Extreme Materials Institute. And each year, the HEMI, Hopkins Extreme Materials Institute.
What right. the heck is that?
It resides, I believe, in their engineering school, but it pulls together Johns Hopkins, you know, physicists, other kind of scientists together to look at how materials can be used and transformed for, you know, engineering invention. So MICA has an embedded residency where a faculty and a student each year invited to work with these mixture of scientists and physicists and engineers to see how artistic intervention and insights can help to interpret and visualize research outcomes. And at the same time, their learning from the scientists also inform their art making and design, you know, invention. We also are venturing into, this always raises people's eyebrows, and venturing into what we call biofabrication. So when you think about art schools, wood shop, people always say, oh, you come in, you build a chair out of wood. But if you look at today's technology, you
3D
can
3D printing now.
Yeah, 3D printing,
etc. You can just print a chair.
Right, yeah. Not only print a chair, but you can also look at cellular manipulation in a very ethical way to actually grow a chair out of tissues. So we have actually a Grow the Future class where students and under leadership of faculty look at what would be possible for biotech in 5 to 15 years. That's not what people normally think of, you know, art school.
At an art school, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but we have that. But at the same time, we also have ceramics and printmaking and all the other. The good thing about MICA is they're extremely fluid, flexible, immersive. So students come in, they choose their home department, but they have a lot of flexibility to take all these other classes to invent, again, a very rich practice in the future.
An email from Mike who says, take the question of pay and reverse it. How would you be if you have a high-paying job, but you hate it? The question as to a creative degree and pay is a false one. Architecture, industrial design, graphic design, and other fields can make a fine living.
Absolutely.
Quality of life, again, right. you know, is determined by things other than
Absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely. And again, the SNAP survey that I mentioned, been performed multiple years, all show that art school graduates overall has very, very high life satisfaction.
Yeah. Life satisfaction, but they also, like right. students in all other fields, right. have high degrees of student debt.
Yes.
So how, what's your take? I ask everybody who comes in for this series to talk about
it's
that.
It's the right question.
You know, there are trillions of dollars of student debt out there that is going to be borne by these students for decades to come. So what's MICA's responsibility in that regard?
Yeah, so I think it goes back to my previous comment that the combination, the solution will come from a combination of reducing costs, and MICA also has been increasing, you know, scholarship and financial aid. And one thing we did in the last 4 to 5 years is also to keep the tuition increase at the lowest level compared to the decade before. And it's really hard for family when they don't know one year to the other how much tuition might be increasing. So if you have jumping from, say, 4% to 7% and down to 5 and then 6, it's a like a roller coaster ride. And what the board of trustees and the senior team at MICA all agree that we will, before we actually raise enough money and control costs enough that we can have either a much lower increase, zero increase, we keep our tuition increase annually at the lowest level in the college's history and make it predictable. So when a family and you know can say, okay, if you get like 3.5% this year, next year also 3.5% going forward. And then at the same time, we are...
But it always does go up.
Yeah, it always does. Well, I think that's because actually the business model, it's a model that has structuralized that can increase. I can explain that in a second, but I'll make a comment first. So, and then the other one is actually we are trying to give our students these enhanced capacity
to earn more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this and several other of the initiatives that MICA has instituted here in the last 5 years that Sammy Hoy has been at the helm. MICA President Sammy Hoy does join me. And after a break, we'll talk more with him. Our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Before we take a break, on Mondays here on our program, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence during the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in 2019, 209 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Michelle Blanding, who was 35 years old when she was shot in 1995, died this past May from health complications related to her injuries. Last week, city medical examiners ruled her death a homicide. Michelle Blanding was 59. This past week, Baltimore police reported that 8 people lost their lives to violence in our city. The identities of 2 of those victims have been released. Tamar Brown was shot in June of 2015. He died last week due to complications from those injuries. Tamar Brown was 24 years old. The only other victim from last week whose identity has been released so far is a child, Malachi Lawson. He was 4 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you just joined us, it's Midday on Higher Education, an occasional series in which we sit down with the leaders of colleges and universities throughout the state of Maryland. My guest today is MICA President Samuel Hoy. MICA is the Maryland Institute College of Art. Tuition and fees at MICA are just south of $70,000 per year, so is an investment of that magnitude in an art degree a sound investment? Should tuition in any degree be considered in terms of its return on investment? If art is your passion and you are talented enough to be accepted into an art school as highly regarded as MICA, should you jump in? And is there evidence that creative thinkers and makers will in fact be among the most highly desirable employees in an economy that is fueled by entrepreneurs and future-focused people? Is an art degree the it degree of today? You are welcome to join our conversation and weigh in. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page as well. Let's go to Lynn in Annapolis. Lynn, welcome to Midday with Sammy Hoy.
Hi, Tom. Hi, President Hoy.
Hi.
Thanks to you both. Just quickly, I'm a senior citizen. I'm from Baltimore, but I haven't lived in Baltimore for a long time. I'm in love with Baltimore and always will be. All those hills and beautiful street trees. I would love, as a senior citizen, to go to summer camps at Maryland Institute for a week or 2 weeks or 10 days, maybe live in safe dormitory housing at somewhere in a partnership maybe with another college, but it might be a really attractive idea to make a summer camp for senior citizens. Because art is essential.
Great idea. I'm going to bring that back to our open studies program, and we'll try to see if we can make it happen. That's
great.
A great idea.
All right. Well, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate that. Let's go to Daniel in Halethorpe. Daniel, welcome to Midday.
How are you? Since you were talking about a particular major, I spent my entire career teaching art in higher education at a university, and I just wanted to offer an alternative to the private art school. And I'm not suggesting it's better. I'm just simply suggesting it's an alternative way. And before I go into that, I would make one comment, and that is, the making of art is inherently useful in the rest of one's life, because it's the highest order of thinking. I mean, it's self-actualization. So, I mean, just by creating something, that definitely makes you prepared for the future. That said, public art education, it has a little bit different approach. About half of one's courses are in studio classes. The other half are in what one might call, John Dewey call, a well-rounded education. So I think, and one could also argue, as an alternative, that if life is a reflection of, if your art is a reflection of the life you lead, the more inputs you have, whether they be math, science, literature, et cetera, the richer your art is going to be.
All right. Well, thanks for that comment, Daniel. I appreciate it. And you do have partnerships with places like Johns Hopkins. You mentioned.
No, not only that. I first of all, I agree with Daniel. I think there are many paths for different people, and people have to make the right choices. When we interview and talk to prospective applicants, we actually actively counsel our interested students whether MICA is the best path, a public education is the best path, a liberal art college or community college would be the right path for them. So I think that we should all exist to serve different people of different needs. One thing I just want to suggest, I think that I want to make clear is that a public education, I assume that you mean a liberal arts education, a BA versus a BFA, they are both well-rounded. The only difference is that a Bachelor of Art, a Bachelor of Science programs is two-thirds in general studies and one-third in the specialized major area, and a BFA is two-thirds in the creative discipline and one-third in general studies. And MICA actually offers very high quality general studies program of our own. Plus, our students can also cross register and take classes at Johns Hopkins and other area colleges and vice versa. So I think in terms of well-roundedness, it's just a different proportion and emphasis, yeah. But they're all well-rounded.
And an allocation of time. We have Mary Lynn, who pings us on Facebook, saying art is therapeutic for our Baltimore community. The place of MICA as an anchor institution in the city. There's a guy who studies the arts and its relationship to the economy, a guy named Richard Florida, talks about the creative class and says that our city, Baltimore, in the last 12 years grew 16%. It's among the fastest growth of so-called creative people in the country. What is the responsibility of MICA to the community of Baltimore, a community that clearly has a lot of needs?
Absolutely. I think we can do another hour on this conversation
alone.
So since we have a few minutes, I'll try to be as succinct as possible. MICA is an anchor institution in Baltimore, both in definition of the field of anchor institution, meaning that this is MICA is not huge, but we are big enough that we actually have enough heft in terms of employment, in terms of real estate development, in terms of purchasing power, to make a difference in the city. But we are also technically included by the city of Baltimore as one of 12 ETS and MED anchor institutions. So as an anchor institution, we take our responsibility very, very seriously. And actually, 2 years ago, we re-articulate the MICA mission and vision with the MICA campus community, and we actually brought Baltimore into our mission. So the middle of our mission now is Thrive with Baltimore, before Make the World We Imagine. So we choose the word thrive with very carefully. We are not improving Baltimore. We're not elevating Baltimore. We are in there with Baltimore together and learning from each other, working together, and facing the opportunities and the challenges together to make a city a better place. And MICA has a very, very long history of that. As a matter of fact, there is a wonderful report that just came out this summer by ICIC, which stands for, I think, Initiative for Competitive Inner City, and the Kresge Foundation. And looking at anchor institutions around the country and organizations, and they pick four that exemplify the best practice in using art and culture to improve disinvested and underserved cities. And MICA is one of the four that they, and the only art school of the models that they cite. So that was a shorthand way to say, no, we do many, many things. And not only do we have a center for creative citizenship, we have majors like social design, community arts, curatorial practice with very strong kind of social application of art and design thinking and talent. We also have student internships and awards and prizes that encourage our students as well as our faculty to work in the community. So MICA is very much a part of the fabric, you know, of the city. And actually now with one of your comrades on air, Sherry Parks, who is now our VP of Strategic Initiatives, we are doing even more work kind of with the city.
You're also a partner with a thing called BCAN, the Baltimore Creatives Acceleration Network. It's run by a couple of friends of ours, Maggie Villegas, right, and Sharena Christmas, who does
absolutely
the program.
Actually, Micah spearheaded that project. That project, we raised all external funding because we didn't feel that it would be right for us to take our tuition dollar income for this. But it is a rare project among art schools to support creatives in its city without requirement affiliation with the school. So basically, we have raised national money to create enterprise incubator, a very successful founder fellows program that Sharena and Maggie ran last year. We had it was inaugural first time. We had
and this is to encourage people, yep, just creative people, first of all, to stay here.
Yes.
And to work here.
Right.
I mean,
to build the native capacity for people who have, you know, good business idea but work in a creative field to build successful businesses. So,
because, yes, you know, when people have an impression of Baltimore that is a negative impression, and we, right, went through this a couple of weeks ago with, right, you know, of all people, the president tweeting about this, it's bad for your business as well. Do you have do you have parents calling you and worrying about, you know, the physical safety of your students? In terms of your admissions, I mean, are you mm-hmm, having people shy away from applying to MICA because they're afraid to come to Baltimore?
I think this is very interesting, kind of turning from MICA about 4 years ago after Freddie Gray happened in 2015. I would say prior to that, MICA is a top-ranked art school, and people would come to MICA because of the reputation, because they want, and Baltimore is not something they thought a great deal about, and they discovered Baltimore after they arrived. After Freddie Gray and after that sensationalistic kind of portrayal of Baltimore with the unrest or the riot, then I think people have become much more mindful of choosing Baltimore. It also positioned MICA to tell the story about Baltimore in a much more compelling way, and also tie Baltimore into our education. And that's why our mission actually has Baltimore in it. So I would say nowadays, international and national students and families, when they come to MICA, they're much more mindful. They're coming for MICA and also in some way for Baltimore. And that's a positive change.
Yeah, that's really interesting that it's actually part of your mission to be.
It's part of our identity, part of our mission. Yeah, yeah. And that's part of thriving Baltimore.
Sammy Hoy is the president of MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art here in Baltimore. It's always good to see you, sir.
And, great to see you,
good
Tom.
Luck
as Thank you so much.
As the school year gets underway.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on Midday, a conversation about immigration with Krish Omara Vignaraja of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, Dave Cronin of Catholic Relief Services, and Carolyn Barker Velena of Lutheran World Relief. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. Hope you can join us then. We want to thank the Diz for providing lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Here and Now is up next after news at the top of the hour. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.